The 100 Years' War, the Duguesclin period. John of Gaunt begins his march across France. Around August the 23rd, 1373, John of Gaunt's great column began to head east from the Vendomois. They crossed the Oise south of Saint Quentin, passing well north of Philip of Burgundy's headquarters at Soissons. They then made for Laon and Reims, leaving behind a swath of looted barns and burned farmsteads and villages. On about September the 3rd, they passed Laon. A few days later, they crossed the Aisne by the bridge at Villers and marched south towards Espernay. The terrain was easy. The only serious obstacles were the many river crossings. A corps of carpenters proved adept at throwing bridges across the ruptured ends of the masonry, which the French had left behind them. Supply was a more difficult problem. To feed an army of this size off of the country, it was necessary to spread out over a broad front and to send armed foraging expeditions some way from the main body. They proved to be very vulnerable. As the English moved into the Champagne, they began to encounter increasing resistance and suffered heavy casualties and losses of men and horses. The French formed harassing forces of a few hundred mounted men, pick off stragglers, and foraging parties one by one. At the beginning of September, Jean de Breuil surprised a company of Englishmen north of Laon and took a large number of prisoners. On the 9th, another English detachment commanded by Walter Hewitt was ambushed near Oisy-le-Château, south of Soissons, and Hewitt was killed in the encounter and more than 30 of his men-at-arms were captured. Bands of peasants hidden in the forest fell on anyone wearing the cross of St. George or speaking English, or any other strange and horrible language, battering them to death, drowning them, or slitting their throats. It was to be the pattern of this campaign. In the middle of September 1373, the French forces in the north were ordered to concentrate at Troyes, a cathedral city on the left bank of the Seine, south of the Champagne. The strategy appears to have been to prevent the English army from swinging around to the west and approaching Paris through the Gâtinais, as Edward III had done in 1359, or for that matter, from making a dash for Brittany, as Knowles had done in 1370. The king's orders were that they were to delay, harass, and exhaust the enemy, but on no account to give battle. Once again, the policy was controversial, especially amongst its victims in the undefended countryside of northern France, whose murmurings were becoming too loud to be ignored. At a council of war in Paris, the constable had to remind his fellow councillors about Crecy and Poitiers and the many pitched battles which the French had fought and lost against the English. Olivier de Clisson, who was brought up with the English and knows their ways better than any of you, would back him up, he said. According to Froissart's much embellished account of this meeting, the king declared that he would not risk the lives of his knights and the fate of his realm for a corner of land. The Duke of Burgundy left Soissons on September the 10th, shortly after the Council of War had concluded, and joined forces with the other French corps in the next few days. On the 15th, they entered Troyes. The two armies came as close as Troyes as they would ever do. The English began to cross the River Aube, north of the city, a few days after the French had arrived. On September the 22nd, the vanguard of John of Gaunt's army penetrated into the undefended suburbs of Troyes, breaking into the rich suburb monasteries and mansions, and throwing themselves against the outworks which the French had built in front of the bridgehead on the right side of the river. They paid heavily for their indiscipline. A sudden sortie from the city caught them unawares, killing 120 of them and capturing 80 more. Three Bretons, presumably retainers of Jean de Montfort, were found amongst the prisoners and summarily executed as traitors. John of Gaunt tried to provoke a battle outside of Troyes. He halted the main body of his army in the plain north of the city. From the city walls, they could see through the haze and the smoke rising from the wreckage of the suburbs, standing in formation for 3 days in succession and daring the French to attack them. The French, of course, refused to move. On September the 25th, the English marched away up the valley of the Seine. The army crossed the river between the walls of the fortress of Guillet-sur-Seine, 30 miles upstream, at about the end of the month. But Gaunt did not attempt to turn west, as the French must have expected him to do. Instead, he made a dash southward into the Nivernais, in the upper river of the Loire, toward Auvergne, pursued at a distance by the Duke of Burgundy. By the first days of October, it was clear that John of Gaunt was looking for a crossing of the Loire, and that he was heading not for Brittany, but for Gascony. The Duke of Anjou had by now reached Brittany. He arrived at Derval shortly before the date fixed for its surrender. He was joined there by Olivier de Clisson. Anjou's long march from Languedoc had been a mistake, as events had turned out. The region that he had come to defend was no longer threatened. The garrison of Derval added to his frustrations by refusing to surrender according to their agreement. Knowles had re-entered the fortress and repudiated the treaty which his lieutenants had made. They had acted without his authority, he said. The Duke of Anjou had the hostages brought out and beheaded beneath the walls in full view of the defenders. In law, he was within his rights, although there was plenty of men in his army who protested at this act. According to the report, it was Clisson who insisted on their execution. If they do not die, I shall not so much as put a helmet on my head for your war, he is said to have told the Duke. Knowles responded by having an improvised scaffold built out from a high window of the keep, where four French prisoners of war were promptly beheaded and thrown into the castle ditch. It was the second time in as many months that Knowles had dishonored the conventions in which the war between noblemen was founded. Now the sources for this, The Hundred Years' War, The Chronicles by Froissart, The Hundred Years' War by Perrois, The Hundred Years' War by Nylans, and The Hundred Years' War, The House Divided, Volume 3 by Sumption. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.